Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, good evening, or should I say good morning, because it feels like it's early hours of the morning. I'm your host, Stel. Welcome to Shooter's Defence. Sorry for the late live stream. I have had a few technical issues. I blame myself. Jan is in the kitchen cooking something, whatever he can cook. So as I said, I'm your host, Stel. This show is sponsored by The Life of A. We're on FNX. I've got three co-hosts this evening. First of all, as you already know, is Yannickis, who's sat very close to the camera.
I can see. Am I that close? There you go. I wanted everybody to see me. Hello, everybody. Good evening.
That's a very nice pan you have in the background. Do you use that to wash your face in?
Maybe. I'll be telling.
Oh. Okay. You know. Have you ever heard of The Twits? Roald Dahl's book, The Twits?
No.
You look like Mr. Twit. Do you know that?
Yeah. It's
the beard. Must be the beard. Right. My other regular co-host, as ever, is Mr. Rodri Giggs. How you doing, Rod?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. How are you? Okay?
Yeah, can't complain. You're very faint, but I can only blame my other device that I've got you recording on, so I apologise in advance to anyone that can't hear. Rodri's very, how can I put it, attractive voice. Now, our guest this evening is none other than Stoke City Academy director Gareth Jennings. He's back on Shooter Defence. Welcome back, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, Stel. How are you?
Yeah, very good, mate. Very good. Apologies again for the technical problems that we've been having. I appreciate you waiting very patiently.
No problem at all.
Thank you very much. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's talk about the Premier League because there's been a match that's happened this evening. It's Southampton versus Swansea City. Southampton have actually got the win at Swansea, which I think means Swansea are in very, very, very dangerous ground now. They weren't safe. By no means safe, should I say. I think now Huddersfield only need a point to stay up. Jan, you watched most of that game. Smash and grab win, right?
It was, but what a massive victory for Southampton. I mean, if you look at the fixtures a couple of weeks back, they look doomed, to be fair. And, you know, even the being 2-0 up against Chelsea at home and losing, you would have thought maybe they would have crumbled, but fair play to them, to Mark Hughes. They've picked up results where, you know, it was a six-pointer tonight. If there's ever a game that was a six-pointer, it was tonight. And to go away, to keep a clean sheet, and like you said, smash and grab. But the 3 points is all that matters at this stage, and what a massive victory. And it looks like, you know, they're going to stay up because of that.
Gareth, what did you make of Southampton's performance tonight? Because they were very unlucky at the weekend, which we're going to go into in just a moment. It's a huge result, and it's not even an understatement, is it?
No, it's a massive result for them. I've got to be honest, on paper, I thought they looked the strongest team down there. They've probably got a little bit more firepower than everyone else. So great result this evening. Biggest disappointment for me is that West Point Albion are now down. Who I think have done fantastic over the last few weeks under Darren Moore. So it'll be a big disappointment for them. But great for Southampton. Gives them a fantastic opportunity now to stay up. And, credit to Mark Hughes and his team for, being persistent and getting the team firing again.
Mm. Rod, I bet you're a bit happy with Swansea being close to relegation now, no? Rod's disappeared, so clearly we've upset him somehow. I don't know what to say, he's just gone. So,
well, to be fair, still, Rod said a couple of weeks ago that Swansea will go down, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Sorry, again, you couldn't hear me. More technical problems. As I said, Rod Stradamus, as I like to call him. Well, let's talk about the Premier League games and over the weekend. Then, while the title is wrapped up, there's the small matter of the final place for the relegation spot. And believe it or not, the race for the top four is up for grabs as well. Now, for the first time in, I can't remember when actually none of the top four sides won at the weekend. United's loss at Brighton guaranteed Chris Hughton's men another season in the Premier League, while the other promoted side, Huddersfield, earned a draw at champions Man City. A point that, given tonight's result, could actually be priceless. Now, Jan, I know you've wanted to get things off your chest with United, so here's your opportunity, mate. The floor is all yours while I look for Rodri Giggs. One moment.
I'm going to surprise you still. I'm not going to rant. I think what happened on Friday is probably a blessing in disguise. I mean, as United fans, we've known for a while that this squad is not good enough. And Friday just proved what... yeah, you can have all these players in a squad. You can have a squad of 22 players. But if 16 of them are rubbish, there's no point. You know, questions were asked over the season. Why doesn't Rashford play? Martial, etc. Other players. Well, Friday just proved it. And not basing it, you know, just on the fact on Friday. But it was really poor. United couldn't pass to a United shirt. I mean, I think they stepped into Brighton's box once in the first half. That's how poor United are. And I think there'll be a big summer clear out. The only negative thing I have with the manager, which you and I have kind of pointed out this season, is the fact that he plays negative, so to speak, football. But you know what? I'm going to cut him some slack for once, still. I think he plays that style because he knows what he's got, that absolute garbage. And he's got to play a certain style to suit what he's got there. Maybe if he signed a few more free, you know, flair players and defensively was a bit more sound, you might see a more attacking United. I'm not here to criticise the manager. I think he's worked wonders, actually, for what he's had. And the players need to take a look, you know, a hard look at themselves and realise that they might not be wearing a red shirt next season.
I can't believe how you've changed your tune. 3 weeks ago, you wanted him sacked, and now you're telling me that he's working wonders with what he's got.
Sacked? All right, I know where you're coming from. Sacked, I wouldn't say sacked as in, oh, he's got a goal. It was the style of football that bores me with United. And maybe we have been spoiled over the years watching United in a certain style of football, etc. We all know Mourinho is always kind of pragmatic. He is defensive. He'll prefer a 0-0 than maybe going out to win a game, etc. And maybe as United being my team, I like them to play a more expansive style of football. But you can't blame him for playing a certain style with, I'm sorry, the rubbish he's got. And to get to three cup finals in 2 years with that squad, you've got to give him credit. You can't knock him for what he's done. And I'm hoping, as a United fan, he addresses the rubbish he's got there. And I keep referring to rubbish, and I'm sorry if I offend the players, but for me, they're rubbish. And he brings in better quality and we can challenge City for the title.
Oh, if this was a church on earth, I'd say praise the Lord, hallelujah. We actually agree on something. Rod, unbeknown to us, Sir Alex was recovering from a major operation while United were putting on a shower of sharp performance. What was your initial reaction when you heard the news, mate? Rod?
I was shocked because, you know,
Karen?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was a shock, first of all. Just, you know, you see him handing out shoulder to Arsene Wenger, all lively like he is, and then the next minute he's in us for fighting for his life. So it's a big shock, but you know, words coming back that he's talking, he seems like a bit better, but you know, he's still not out of the woods, but you know, it was a big shock, but you know, fingers crossed, hopefully he comes through and lives another day.
That's right. And Gareth, I'm sure you were just as shocked as us when the news broke, mate. It was it came out of the blue, didn't it, mate?
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's an iconic figure to everyone in the game, and someone that everyone looks up to as a leader. Someone that, you know, won a number of titles, and you know, like Rod said, he was a picture of health the week before, presented to Arsene Wenger, and so it's something that's come out of the blue. I think it's knocked everyone around, sort of, you know, how precious life is, and you know, I'm sure we all wish him well and speedy recovery.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, moving on to a club connected with someone on the panel tonight, Stoke City. Their 2-1 loss against Crystal Palace meant the Potter's tenure saying the Premier League has come to an end. Now, Jan, Jack Butland blamed the club's recruitment process. And when you look at some of the players who were brought in, you can kind of see what he means. I mean, that being said, surely the loss of the likes of Walters, Whelan, Barnsley and Arnautovic, very experienced players that know the Premier League inside out, played a huge part as well.
Yeah, I agree. Just touching up on Stoke, I think, you know, the players that they brought in, I mean, they brought Bernardinho, who hasn't scored a goal.
You might have to start again there, mate. You've gone all quiet.
Can you hear me?
Have you been muted?
Can you hear me?
1 second, mate. This is brilliant. I've never seen your mouth move so fast. Hang about. Go on, start again, mate.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
You did that on purpose, didn't you?
I didn't do anything. Go on, carry on.
Just saying about, you know, the players that they brought in. They brought Berahino, who hasn't even scored a goal for Stoke. I mean, that kind of sums it up. But it's probably, Gareth will probably know this more than I, but, you know, all the negative surroundings around the club all year, you know, the likes of, like, Afellay and Hesse, it's, you know, Charlie Adam, you know, there's been a lot of plays behind the scenes that seem that there's a lot of unrest that's kind of, you know, materialized onto the pitch as well. And to be fair, the performances haven't been good. The results haven't. Basically, they haven't scored enough goals still for them to stay up. That's the biggest problem. They sold Arnautovic, as you said. They've relied on Crouch, who's what, 35, 36, you know, to get them goals. You know, if you're going to buy a player from West Brom for, I don't know, 10, 15 million, he's not going to put the ball in the back of the net. You've got no hope of staying up. And Stoke, over the years, defensively, have been sound as well. And they've been leaking goals. So, leaking goals, not scoring any goals, the inevitable is going to happen.
Gareth, I don't know if you want to answer this question, mate, but how big of a character were the likes of, you know, Walters and Whelan in the dressing room, do you know?
Yeah, you know, they're influential people in the game. Leaders in football, and it's, you know, it is difficult when you lose these players. I think everyone at the club, you know, it's really difficult because I think at the time everyone thinks they're making the right decisions and doing the right things for Stoke City Football Club. It's not worked out. I think there's a great opportunity for them to now to refocus, and you know the sort of positives you take out of it is that there's an opportunity to do that. You know, the supporters have been fantastic and got behind them even when it's been really difficult times. We've got a manager that's come in, and there has been that, you know, that boost, and things looking positive. I'm sure he'll want to make some changes, and you know, I'm sure the sort of hierarchy at the club will want to make changes in terms of what the club looks like. So it's an opportunity to refocus, but yeah, difficult to replace those characters. I think, you know, the club have made great efforts to try and do that, but you know, certain signs have not worked out. I can assure you it's not from want of trying.
I agree, mate. I agree. Well, Rod, Leslie Hughes, who should take a lot of the blame for Stoke's demise, must feel like the whole world is against him after his Southampton side were denied all 3 points at Goodison thanks to a 96-minute equaliser. Now, Mark Bertrand's decision to keep the ball in play instead of letting it go led to Everton's goal. It didn't turn out to be a big mistake because obviously Southampton won tonight. Are we looking at a manager that has run out of ideas, mate? And is he just relying on Lady Luck?
Matt Hughes?
Yeah.
Well, he obviously didn't sort the problem out at Stoke. He does moan a lot. He does make excuses. But, just, you know, obviously touched on what Jan said before with Stoke. He's obviously not scoring enough goals. But they must have had like two or three clean sheets. Maybe four. That's a massive issue. Obviously, you've got to work on that as a manager. You obviously didn't address the issue because they were leaking goals. And if you're not scoring goals, then the best way to show up and defend them didn't do that. So, you know, he doesn't like a moan, but, you know, he's obviously got out of it with arguably probably best squad down there, but you know, still Stoke have got decent players there. But like I said, the leaking goals are not scoring. West Brom have got a decent squad as well. But you know, if you, these managers that they're going to bring in, you know, even though Paul Lambert's come in. Even though Paul Lambert's come in, even though he's a likeable character by all accounts, you know, he's still not got on the points to get him out. So will we keep him on? I very much doubt it, because you know it's a massive decision now who they bring in, because next year they don't want to be a real difficult league, that championship. And really, ideally, they just want to bounce back straight away. Obviously, they've got to start again, Stoke and West Brom, but they've been through this before, you know. They got relegated, they come back up, they got relegated, and they steadied themselves and come back up, and then stayed in the Premier League for a long period of time. So they're obviously going to do that again. But obviously, like Kyle said, recruitment's massive now for Stoke and West Brom, and it's key to get straight back into the Premier League, you know, that championship. If you stay in there two or three seasons, it becomes very difficult.
That's right. And Gareth, the light at the end of the tunnel got Brighton for West Brom following an injury time win against Spurs from Jake Livermore. Now, Everton's level against Southampton keeps the Baggies in the division. Well, I thought it was going to keep them in the division for one more week, but obviously the defeat tonight has actually sent them down. They didn't go down without a fight, though, did they?
No. It's quite difficult in my household, actually. My wife works for West Bromwich Albion, so it's not a good week for us. I think obviously Darren Moore's come in there and done a fantastic job. He's probably, you know, the nice guy in football. I think he's respected by a lot of people. I can imagine that the players would be right on board in terms of, you know, wanting to do well for him. So great response from him. Just a shame that they couldn't have that sort of miracle right at the end. It was always going to be really difficult for them. Credit to them, what they've done over the last few weeks. I've got to be honest, I've seen them probably four times this year, and they've actually played really well. I've been surprised that you know, it's taken them so long to put a run of games together. I think West Brom will be an interesting one about, you know, who they manage to keep hold of, because the core of the squad is not bad, but I understand there's quite a few of them with clauses where they can leave. I think they'll be an interesting one for next year to look at.
Gareth, we have been a bit critical of Alan Pardew over the past few months, to say the least. Now, we try to watch what we say, because obviously, you know, we know people who know Alan Pardew on a personal basis, and we don't want to step on people's toes and get in that realm. Do you know what I mean? We're very careful as to what we say. But can you understand the thinking behind his appointment at West Brom? Because let's be brutally honest, he never really was a manager that you'd bring in to kind of galvanise if you're at the bottom of the table, in the bottom half of the table, to push the teams up. All the teams that he's really taken over, they've pretty much been mid-table safe Premier League teams, haven't they? Charlton Athletic, West Ham United, Newcastle, Reading to some extent, you know. So why do you think, you know, they took that gamble to bring him in?
I think the hierarchy at the club at the time had worked with him previously, and it was someone that they trusted in the game, probably felt that you know that was the best fit. Obviously, the Chinese ownership group have trusted their judgment on that, and you know, I'm sure they felt they're making the best decision for West Bromwich Albion. In all honesty, you get a merry-go-round of managers, I think clubs now are really going to have to start to do their due diligence and make sure that those appointments are correct. It's worth so much to the club. It doesn't just affect the club as well. I think, you know, you have to look wider than that. It affects the whole community and the industry around that organisation. It has a massive impact. So to make sure that you do your due diligence on the management team that's coming in is hugely, hugely important. I think, you know, Alan Pardew is someone that he is respected in the game, without a doubt. But he certainly wasn't the right fit at West Bromwich Albion at this particular time.
Mm, yeah, I agree, mate. I agree. Well, gents, West Ham are all but safe thanks to an unlikely win at Leicester City. Now, many fans are still unhappy with the owners. In fact, they're unhappy with some of the players. They're even unhappy with the manager. Surprise, surprise. You know, I was at a football fan show the other day, and there was a West Ham fan there, and we were talking about David Moyes, and he was telling me, it's almost as if I was talking to myself when it came to David Moyes, because everything that he was saying mirrored what I was saying about David Moyes when he was Manchester United manager. Now, is there a chance, guys, that if they keep David Moyes, are they going to be one of the three that go down next season? Because, look, even Paul Lambert said, Stoke are too big to go down. Well, proof is in the pudding. We've seen Blackburn go down. We've seen Villa go down. Do you think West Ham could be one of those teams, Jan?
No, I don't think so, still, due to the fact that the owners will be under massive pressure to invest and spend money. And I think if they invest wisely there, I mean, you know, the Arnautovic signing was a good signing that inevitably kept them up. I think a couple of more signings like that, and I don't think they'll go down. I think they're worse size than West Ham in the Premiership.
Interesting one. Gareth, would you agree? Are there worse teams in the Premier League than West Ham?
I'd completely agree with the analogy that, you know, West Ham are under pressure, and I think there's an expectation because it's a Stam used to play that people still talk about, and a passion to their supporters. So I think they're under pressure to make sure that they get it right, whether that's with David Moyes or a different manager. I think they've done well going in there, to be honest, and keeping them up. Again, I think there might be another club that has a bit of an overhaul and looks at recruitment. I think that'll be an interesting one next year. I don't think any club's too big to go down, to be honest. You know, we looked at it the year that Leicester won the league, and Chelsea were right down there, and you know, they've gone and won the Premier League the following year, but they quite easily could have slipped into it. Everton this year were right down there, and they've had a turnaround. So I think, you know, I don't think any club can really rest on their laurels and think, you know, this couldn't happen to us, because, like you say, you know, your clubs like Aston Villa, who are massive, shouldn't be in the Championship. But the reality is, it can happen to anyone.
That's right. And Rod, do you think they've got a chance of going down next season?
West Ham, no. I agree with the fellas. I think they've got far too many good. We said it before, but I just think they've got far too many good players. And with David Moyes' experience, there's a lot more teams than West Ham. And yeah, I agree with the fellas. I don't think they'll be even close. And, you know, like the fellas said, you have to recruit well, because they're under pressure with the fans, with the board there that's there right now. So yeah, I'd expect
them
to be a mid-table team
again. Fair enough, Jan. You can say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, he's hardly had any money to spend there still. I mean, he bought, Jean-Marie on loan, and he bought Evra, you know. So he hasn't really had any money for him to spend there. So for what he's had, I think he's done a decent job to keep them up, to be fair. I mean, I'm not David Moyes' biggest fan, as you know, but you got to give him a little bit of credit for what he's done. I mean, Hernandez has not been great. Carroll's been injured, so he's had limited resources even up front. Antonio's missed most of the season. They've had a lot of injuries, West Ham, so you got to give him a little bit of credit for keeping them up.
Mm-hmm. Well, on to another manager that deserves a lot of credit and working with a shoestring budget, Arsene Wenger. he gave him the perfect sign-off in his final home game as boss, trouncing Burnley 5-0. Meanwhile, at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea overcame Champions League finalist Liverpool 1-0 to close the gap between them and fourth place Spurs to 2 points. Dos puntos. Right, Rod, the pressure is on Spurs, so hold on, mate, and we know what happens when they're up against the wall. Are we about to see another Spurs collapse?
Possibly, you know, over the last couple of years, they've been the other chance to win the league, or you know, they had a little sniff against Leicester, they bottled it then. You know, in the FA Cup semi-final, basically at home, they already beat United and they bottled it then. They really just played to the standards they should have done. You know, he's obviously under pressure because they need to perform. They've got a squad of players now there, a group of players that need to be winning things now, or you know, the big teams are going to come sniffing and ultimately they're going to leave the club. So obviously they're going to stay for next year because they'll be in the new ground. But you know, they have to start shaping up, and you know, if they don't start winning stuff soon, then they're going to be labelled as bottlers because you know they have got a talent squad. Some of them British and English as well, so that obviously helps. And they're not performing, or they're not getting confused. The other teams are getting Man United in the FA Cup final, Chelsea in the FA Cup final, probably okay, Arsenal out. City won the league, and Liverpool in the Champions League final. So all the top teams are playing for stuff, and you know, top demand. So they have to start winning stuff, and next year with the time to do that, or you can see a mass scale at Tottenham, because like I say, there's some big players there and they need to be winning things.
That's right.
I think the stadium's given them one more season still. I think a lot of the players are going to want to play in the new stadium. So I think the new stadium's come at the right time for Tottenham, and especially the players, because they probably think new stadium, we'll give it one more year, see how it goes. And then I agree with Rod, if nothing happens at Tottenham, I think the big players will move. Mm.
No, because if you're Harry Kane and you're Dele Alli, next year you don't win anything, and then a Real Madrid or a Barcelona or a Manchester United come in and will triple your wages, come on, it's a no-brainer. An absolute no-brainer. That's Kyle Walker. That's John Stones. You know, the best move they've made. Kyle Walker, that's why he left Tottenham to win the Premier League, and that's what he's done. And obviously, the next team needs to be seeing that. And like Sam says, they'll probably stay another year for the new stadium. But if they don't win anything next year, then there'll be a massive exodus, like I said.
Mm. And Kyle Walker doubled his wages as well, so... We're looking at Spurs' wage structure here. You know, we laugh, but we look at Spurs' wage structure. Harry Kane's their most well-paid player. I think he's only like 80 grand a week or something along those lines. So, you know, if they're not willing to break their wage structure for their players, of course their heads are going to be turned. But, yeah, a player whose head was turned, probably it was turned by Arsenal because they wanted to get Aubameyang. Oliver Giroud, he scored the winner against Liverpool. We've been waxing lyrical about him for God knows how long. Yeah, need I say more, mate?
No, you don't, mate. We touched on it, was it last week or the show before that, how good he is and how influential he is. And he's starting to get the starts now, and he's starting to score goals by starting. The thing what I've liked about Giroud is he's looked dangerous every time he's played. You know, he looks fitter for me. He looks stronger. He looks hungrier. Maybe, you know, it looks like the move has done him, you know, real good. And the fact that he's got a head on Morata as well is probably giving him extra confidence. He's going to be a threat to United in the final. I mean, him and Hazard have linked up really well up front. And he's a threat on the floor, which a lot of the times he doesn't get the credit for, because he's known as a target man or good in the air. But he's good on the floor and he's good in the air. So he's a very good striker, Olivier Giroud.
That's right, mate. Now, Gareth, Arsenal's players decided to turn up. Well, Ozil didn't anyway, and they put in a performance. Question is, mate, why couldn't they put in a shift like this every week for Wenger? I mean, it's been an absolutely shambolic end to a remarkable managerial career at the club.
Yeah, it's I'm sure it's hugely frustrating for him. The level of consistency at Arsenal's been really poor, and they're almost at sort of both ends of the spectrum in terms of, you know, when they do play well, it's exceptionally well, and then, you know, when they're poor, they are poor. And, very, very good against Burnley. The frustration is that obviously, you know, they play in a semi-final the week before where, you know, you want them to produce a similar display, and it's not been present. The big names aren't consistent enough for them. You know, particularly, you know, your Ozil, who is for Germany, but you don't see him. You know, if Arsenal aren't playing well, you don't see him get hold of a game for them and almost take it to the next level. For me, I think they need they need a leader in there, someone that is going to pick performances up when they're not at their best. So you know, I'm sure it's a huge frustration for Arsene Wenger, but you know what a fantastic career that he's had there, and you know the legacy he leaves behind for that club is phenomenal. I'm sure that this won't taint the how people look back on him and how people at the club look back on him, because he's had some fantastic sides there. You know, obviously to take a team through an entire season without losing a game is a huge achievement. You know, I think the change is probably going to do them good. They need to get it right and bring in someone that's going to take them to that next level. You know, we talked about Spurs moving to the new stadium. Arsenal have now settled into that new home. They've made it theirs. But there needs to become a level of consistency now, and they need to be challenging for titles. You know, I thought the year where Tottenham challenged Leicester, I thought Arsenal might be the one that sort of becomes the additional challenger, and they did. Italy on now. They'll bring in someone that sort of takes them to the next level, make some consistent, you know, brings in a leader or leaders into the team, we see a level of consistency that's not been present over the last few years. I think interesting you talk about Giroud. I think it's a fantastic signing for Chelsea, and someone that probably Arsenal could have done with it when they're being inconsistent. I think for me, I'd have worked hard to probably keep him there. It's probably something that Giroud's probably pushed for himself. So a difficult one, but you know, I think he's probably a player that's consistently scored and put in good performances when he's come off the bench. So important time, I think, for. Well, both North London clubs for Arsenal and Tottenham. So I think this will be a really big year for both of them.
You know, I think it's funny that there's a stark contrast between when United lost their greatest ever manager and when Arsenal lose their greatest ever manager. With Arsenal fans, they're very excited about the future. You know, they're looking forward to the new change, what the new manager can bring in. Whereas United fans were, oh, crikey, what are we going to do now? It's weird, and you know, it's weird. It's even stranger because of how much Wenger has done for that club. I mean, forget the titles and the you know, the unbeaten season and the FA Cups and whatnot. I know that he didn't win a European trophy, but what he did for that club, he kind of laid the foundations for a future. You know, that academy is practically there because of him. It's so good because of him. You know, the playing staff, the philosophy, everything about the club seems to be, you know, from Arsene Wenger. I know George Graham had a fantastic stint there, and you know he almost went the season unbeaten in 91, where they only lost one game and conceded 18 goals, and they won the Cup Winners' Cup and whatnot. But because of the way that Arsene Wenger kind of changed the mentality in England, you know, everyone kind of stood up and paid notice when this guy came in. He won the title in his first full season, which is incredible. So I think we've got a lot to thank him for, to be fair. And you know, we've had our jabs at you know, at Wenger. We've had Arsenal fans come on and give their views. But in all fairness, you know, he's a great, isn't he? He's an absolute legend, and we're gonna miss him. We're really gonna miss him. I wish him well. I hope he gets a decent job elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. I'm sure he'll walk into another job and be successful again. Probably, you know, I'm sure he'll reflect on it, and he may have stayed a little bit too long. I think he's had sort of really good success, and you know, probably just become really settled at Arsenal. For me, I think it would have been fantastic if he'd have moved into a senior role at the club, and been able to become a custodian of that club, similar to Alex Ferguson has at Manchester United. But, you know, he obviously feels that there's plenty left in the tank and he's got more to offer. So, you know, good on him. You know, he wants to continue, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him back at Arsenal at some point in a sort of senior role.
You can see it happening, can't you? Right, in other news, Cardiff City secured their second promotion spot in the Championship. They're joining Wolves in the next season's Premier League. And Neil Warnock is another one of those much-troubled managers. He's done it again. It's another promotion, his eighth as manager. Rod, how does he do it?
He keeps things simple by all accounts. He doesn't complicate things. Knows what his strengths are, knows what his weaknesses are. He knows the game, and obviously, you know, he's just done a master, just done a great job there. He's done it a number of times, so it's not a fluke. And he's just he's got him back in the Premiership again. It's, you know, it's fantastic for Cardiff, fantastic for the city. I think even better Swansea getting relegated. Oh, yes. Good times.
Gareth, what do you make of Neil Warnock? I know he's very different to the old school managers, and I think I'm pretty sure it wasn't at Sheffield United, or was it at Huddersfield, where he stopped the training session because he saw a magpie wanting to see another one, or something along those lines. Very, very suspicious manager.
Obviously, what he's done over the last few years, this is obviously a huge achievement at Cardiff. But you look back at what he achieved at Rotherham, you know, it was unimaginable that they were ever going to get out of relegation, and he managed to pull it off. And now he's taken the team up to the Premier League again. He obviously knows how to get the best out of players. He's, you know, I think he's probably got certain characteristics that drive players and motivate them. As Rod says, I'm sure he sort of keeps it quite simple. But he's tactically obviously very astute, understands that there's a way that you can win games of football, and it seems to be very effective for him. So I think a huge, huge, huge achievement in terms of the squad he got available to him, and the finances he got available to him at Cardiff to get them where they are. He's worked a miracle. Huge congratulations from everyone, I'm sure.
That's right. Now, over in Serie A, Juventus' 3-1 home win against Bologna means the old lady are only one win away from securing title number 7 on the trot. Now, this is because Napoli, our good friends, could only draw 2-2 against Juve's rivals Torino at home. Now, when I saw that result, I immediately got on the phone and I thought I'd text Jan, but I thought, you know what, I'm not, because I'm going to say it. Now, I know it's not officially over, but Napoli have done it, haven't they? It's the biggest balls up in Serie A history. They only needed 2-3 wins out of their last 4 against pretty basic teams, Jan. They bottled it.
I think the Higuain goal against Inter Milan was the sucker punch for me. I think they haven't recovered from that. I mean, they lost to Fiorentina the day after, and then they drew with Torino. I just think it comes down to, again, not knowing how to win a league title still. That's my opinion. The fact that they haven't been there, done it before, they didn't know how to cross the line. And Juventus, away at Inter Milan in a difficult game. All right, Inter had 10 men, but they showed character. They showed what champions are made of it, and they managed to get a result. Not playing well on the night. You and I watched that game. Didn't play well, but what mattered was getting the result. But whilst Napoli have played this kind of pretty football and this style, results haven't been there. So, you know, maybe next year they might come back stronger. You know, if Allegri leaves and goes to Arsenal and new management at Juventus, they might not be as strong as they were. And if Napoli could kick on, maybe next season. But then again, the other big clubs in Italy are going to strengthen. I don't think AC Milan are going to be as bad, and Inter are going to look to strengthen. So, you know, I've enjoyed Serie A though this year. I think it's been a really good league. It's probably been one of the best leagues in Europe to watch. It's been, you know, it's renowned for being defensive, but it's been anything but this season. It's been attacking, loads of goals, teams going at each other. I've really enjoyed Serie A. It's been good.
I think you've enjoyed it mostly because, you know, it's gone down to the wire. It really goes down to the wire out there. You know, as we saw the past six seasons, Juventus won it with four or five.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. But, you know, you mentioned how next season might be Napoli's chance of winning Serie A because Allegri could be coming to Arsenal. What if Sarri goes to Chelsea? Because that's the talk at the moment. Maybe that's the only way that he can actually beat Allegri by being at a better team with more money.
I think if Sarri goes to Chelsea, Chelsea will finish fifth.
let's move on. Let's move on. I can't do this. You know I'm not his biggest fan. Right, look. Our No Vardy, No Party feature takes us all the way down under to the A-League Grand Final, the biggest game in Australian soccer. Now, a technical failure at the McDonald Jones Stadium meant the feed to the system was lost, so officials can actually use VAR. Great, isn't it? And this actually proved costly as the winning goal was offside. Now, Melbourne victory, James Donaghy was in an offside position from the free kick, and it was his header back across goal that provided the assist for Costa Barbarossas. Now, Gregor Rourke, the head of the A-League, said, on this occasion, I'm not going to try and do an Australian accent because I can't rubbish with accents. I can't even do a Scottish accent and I'm from London. Right. On this occasion, the technology itself failed and the broadcast angles required were unavailable. While we understand this happened only once this season, it was at the most crucial time, do you think? We understand the disappointment and frustration of the Newcastle Jets, their fans, and indeed all the football fans. We're working with Hawkeye to thoroughly understand why it did and what can be done to prevent this from happening again. Now, yeah, and I'm going to ask you this first because I know you're not a big VAR fan. It's another reason for people such as yourself to kick up a fuss, or I like to call the anti-VARs. Do you think this has actually added fuel to the fire? I mean, let's not forget VAR will actually be used at the World Cup and it failed in the biggest game in Australian football.
I'm not a fan of it, as you know. I've seen four incidents this week with games globally using the VAR, who's for me is an absolute joke still. I don't know if you watch Juventus Bologna on Saturday night when Bologna got a penalty. It took him 6 minutes to look at the VAR, and they didn't look at it because they didn't have the facilities or they couldn't talk to him to do it. So it took 6 minutes to review it. They couldn't review it. So in the end, he gave the penalty. As you said, the A-League game, I saw a German game with Bayer Leverkusen against Stuttgart. Handball in the area, Stuttgart are attacking. He's gone for a throw-in. He stopped the game in the middle of the pitch to go back to give a penalty. You saw it with Mainz, where the players are down the tunnel at half-time and he's bringing it back for a penalty. It's a joke, isn't it? For me, it's a joke. Football should be played as it should. The referee should make the decision. I know Rodri's going to kick up again and go, you know, but unless they get a better technology or a better system or a different way around VAR, for me, it doesn't work in football. It's too controversial. And to be used in the World Cup as well without being tried in the best leagues, I'm not sure. I think it could be a disaster in the World Cup, to be honest.
Well, unfortunately, Rodri's been cut off again. So, Gareth, what's your views on VAR, mate? And especially in a game like this. I mean, can you imagine it happening in the FA Cup final, mate? You know, free kick comes in, players offside.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a place for it. Just because of the importance of the game and the amounts of money that are involved in the game. And there's definitely a place for it, but it needs to be right. I was involved in the trials for testing the system with our young Stoke sides, and we had a few problems on the day, but there were certain decisions that that came about because of VAR that, you know, a referee wouldn't have spotted in the game. And, you know, you know if that was, you know, if we were in an FA Youth Cup final and those decisions got pulled up, you'd be thankful that it was in place. But, you know, I agree with Jan, it needs to be right. I have got concerns with it being in the World Cup. But I'm sure that they must have, almost got some sort of fail-safe system where, you know, if it's going to take a period of time, they're not going to use it. Because I don't think you can be reviewing for 6 minutes or pulling teams back onto the pitch for penalties at a World Cup final. It's too big an occasion for that. So I think there's a place for it, but it does need to be right, and it needs to be tested stringently. I think it's great that it's being tested in the A League in Australia, because it's not one of the top leagues, but it is their top league, and to go to the their biggest game of the season and for a decision that should have been pulled upon VAR to be missed, or for the technology to fail at that particular point is really disappointing. But that's why it's being tested in the A-League, so that if there's going to be a mistake, it happens there, so we can try and identify and rectify these problems before it does go onto the bigger stage.
I agree. You know what? My take on this is quite simple, to be fair. Jan always says that, VR is going to take the talking points out of the game, the excitement, the controversy. Well, it clearly hasn't, because VAR is actually causing more controversy, isn't it? So I think
it's been...
Go on.
No, it's caused more controversy because it's not used properly, or they're not reviewing it correctly as it should. What happened before VAR? We used to play the game of football, better team wins, decisions were made, rightly or wrongly, and we got a lot, we got on with it, All of a sudden, now technology seems to be taking over everything. And for me, it's like the other day with the Brighton goal. Goal line technology, I'm so for, because you could have denied Brighton the chance to stay up if nobody saw that. For that, it's a goal, it's a clear goal. But the referee's job is to make decisions. Now, can you imagine a World Cup final if he's got to review the VAR 8 times during the game because he's going to be scared to make a decision in front of millions of people? You might end up laughing at a World Cup final because of the VAR. That's not right, is it? In a game like that? In my opinion, anyway. I'm very anti-VAR, and my opinions is not going to change. Yeah, they're going to review some decision. They're going to get it right, and there might be a major decision that goes for my team. But there might be a major decision that doesn't go. And for me, that's football. That's why we love the game. You've got opinions. And I don't know. For me, I don't want it in football. But it's going to come, and it's coming. And there's nothing I can do about it.
Gareth, I think there are a lot of things you can guarantee in life. Taxes, death, and not liking VAR. I don't think that will ever change, to be honest, mate. But can you... perhaps reassure him somehow, some way, that it might actually work and be a good thing in the long term?
I was going to suggest perhaps us three sitting on the panel doing the reviewing.
I don't mind. Count me in.
I just think because of how big the game has got now, that there will be a place for it in the future. I completely get Jan's views on it, completely. Particularly with the history of the game and the banter and disputing decisions in the pub and discussing them after a game. I still think that'll exist. I still think there will be things that will be missed, and it'll just almost add to the controversy of it. I think there will be a place in the game. I think the interesting bit for me is that we've got a national game over here in rugby league that the system seems to be working perfectly, and yet we've got our national game where. All the investment in terms of sport in this country is directed at football, we've not managed to hit the nail on the head yet. Hopefully they'll get it right for the World Cup, we'll see a system put in place that works correctly. And I'm sure in years to come we'll probably be asking the question, how did we exist without it?
Mm.
But can I ask you guys on a final note, just on the VAR, if I may, still, yeah? From my understanding, with the VAR, they only kind of review certain decisions in games, as in, is it mistaken identity, offside, penalties, etc., right? Now, how many times have you seen a player go through on goal who's clear onside, but the linesman gives offside, right? If a goal's scored and the guy's offside and the goal's given, they go back to the VAR, they review it and they give offside and they disallow the goal, right? So why don't they ever, when the guy's onside, replay the game and put the striker through one and one on goal? You never see that. So what's the point? Is that not a major decision in a football game?
You've lost me. If a player's onside and the linesman flags.
Yeah, offside, right?
Yeah, but the linesman might flag. Listen, the linesman might flag, but it's up to the referee to blow. So if the referee the referee doesn't blow because he'd rather use VAR because he's not totally sure, then so be it.
Yeah, but if he blows and he's onside, they don't go back to the VAR to review it to say, no, he was onside. We've just, we prevented a goal-scoring opportunity for him. Is that not a major decision in a football match?
No, but this is what I'm talking about. It's to the referee's discretion, isn't it? Let's be honest, right? And I think now you're going to see referees blowing less for certain things that they're not sure about. Now they're kind of like guess, don't they? Let's be honest. A lot of them guess if they're not sure about a decision.
But then it becomes comical because the linesman's not going to know whether to put his flag up or not because he's going to use the telly as a backup.
No.
Which is a farce.
He'll put his flag up because he'll think it's offside. But as you saw at the weekend with the game in Australia, I mean, it wasn't, was it a borderline offside decision? Because to me, he looked blatantly offside.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, if he put the flag up and he was onside, the referee would have blown straight away for offside.
The referee ain't going to blow straight away, mate. The referee's
if the linesman's going to put his flag up, of course he is. He's offside.
They're not going to blow straight away because they're going to wait for the next phase of play to occur. If that next phase leads to a goal, they will check the VAR, and if it's offside, then they'll overrule it.
No, I disagree. If the linesman put his flag up, he's offside. It will stop the game.
Okay, well, yeah, but the referee doesn't have to blow immediately, does he?
But then what's the point of the linesman putting his flag up then?
Well, referees are known to overrule linesmen, aren't they? No. It happens.
But this is what I'm saying. It becomes comical.
But we're discussing something hypothetical, and we haven't even mentioned VAR, really. We're talking about whether the referee's going to blow or not.
Well, he would. If his assistant referee is putting his flag up, it's his duty to give offside because he's trusting his linesman.
Yeah, but what my point is, we've seen numerous incidents in the past where a referee has overruled a linesman, despite the fact that, you know, the linesman being literally 2 meters away from the incident.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ah, right.
I'm not agreeing, but it's fine.
Pat got your tongue, mate. Yeah.
I'm not agreeing.
Right. I'm going to wrap it up with one more quick story. It feels like Groundhog Day, but last week we mentioned the Turkish fan who hired a cherry picker to watch his team play. He was serving a 12-month ban. Same again this week. It looks like the Lincoln City fan must have either been listening to the show or scoured social media, and he was a band supporter. He used the same method to watch his team's final home game of the season. Now, just a quick question for you both, gentlemen. How long before cherry pickers are actually banned within a certain distance from you? You can see it, can't you? Sorry, mate, you can't do any work here today because there's a game and someone might actually use your cherry picker to watch it. It's a genius way of watching a game of football, isn't it, Gareth? Honestly, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I suppose everyone wins because he's still banned from the ground. He's not going to cause any trouble when he's up on a cherry picker.
And he can stand. And he can stand.
He still gets to watch his team play football. So, I suppose it sort of makes it a bit comical that he's still getting access. But I'm surprised the cherry picker's allowed that close to the stadium in the first place. But he's found a solution to be able to watch the game, but he's out of trouble, so I don't think he's causing anyone any harm.
Yeah. And Jan, would you ever get in one of those?
Probably. I'm not going to get one.
And on that note, that's it for tonight. I'd like to thank Rodri, who's not here, but I'd like to thank you, especially Gareth, for joining us, mate. Sorry again for the technical difficulties at the beginning. I hope that didn't put you off coming back on again. It'd be great to have you back and discussing hopefully positive things about Stoke next time around.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. Hopefully, it'll be positive from here on in. But no, thank you for having me on again. I look forward to speaking to you all again.
It's an absolute pleasure. Are you on social media by any chance, Gareth?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Oh, are you on Twitter?
I'm on LinkedIn.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I am on Twitter as well.
Oh, really? I'll have to find you. I didn't find you last time. Yeah. I'll find you.
Yeah.
Great. I'm gonna Twitter stalk you. Great.
Fantastic. Brilliant. I need extra followers.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, we'll get you them. Don't worry. Yeah. What's your handle, mate?
Yannickus J.
Excellent. We're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. Follow our friends at FNX Network and the Life of A. I've got some great, exciting news for next week's show, but I'm not going to reveal it just yet because, hey, you know what? We had some great conversations tonight. I don't want to ruin what we had tonight. We've had jokes. We've had technical difficulties. We've actually had everything, really. I'm just kind of expecting the sink to, like, break through the ceiling at the moment.
Well, you've had the kitchen sink behind me, haven't you? So
the kitchen sink's behind you, yeah. Well, you'll be washing your face sometimes.
I'll be back with you next week still. Don't worry about that.
Excellent. Don't bring your kebab for us with you, please. Wonderful. Right, guys, until next time, take it easy.